me and Lane in the studio, you know, if someone's done a great take with the vocals or playing or something, we don't say that's great or anything. We just say Dennis Edwards, because it's like, don't look any further. You got it. You don't have to do any more.
Meet Simon Law, founding member and the musical engine of music collective Soul to Soul back in the late 80s. Hear about a sound created almost by mistake. A sound with influences from soul, pop and third generation hip-hop and reggae. A sound built on the dance floor on one of the hottest clubs in the UK back then.
So I was going to their club, particularly the one at Africa Central, although they had their own sound system.
I am DJ Soul Swede on soulinterviews.com. Distinctive sound by a very distinctive music collective. Hear the story about Soul to Soul through the eyes of the group's musical engine, Simon Law, aka the Funky Ginger. Also a very successful solo artist, producer and songwriter. But as always, let's take it from the top. Raised in the Caribbean, in Trinidad to be more specific.
My family moved there when I was 2 years old and stayed there till we were seven. My dad was a minister in the Anglican Church, and he had a parish there in Trinidad. And my mum was a a musician, and she actually founded a steel pan orchestra there as well. And I think some of my earliest musical memories would have been before I can remember, but sort of seeping into my soul was the sound of the pan coming from underneath the house, because the house was on concrete pillars, and she'd be rehearsing the orchestra down there. And and you know, the beautiful rhythms of the Caribbean I feel very much at one with the music of the Caribbean, you know, and especially Trinidad. And that was a very much a formative part of my upbringing, I think.
Sometimes I get the impression that you might feel that you were born in a wrong kind of body, almost, because your soul and spirit is very much Caribbean, maybe.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I just think that I think I was born in the right body. But, you know, I do think we all kind of gravitate. Certainly the music that we hear when we're growing up influences us. But then I think, I mean, when we came back to England, I became a choir boy in a cathedral choir, where you're singing English church music, church music for, you know, every day a week, three times on Sundays, lots of practicing outside of school. It was very, you're like a professional musician as a kid, you know, and music of a very high level. And that was very much classical and choral music. But, you know, I think when we gravitate towards the music that really speaks to us, you know, and music that really spoke to me was always had grooves, rhythm, funk, and a sort of joyful quality, you know.
How old were you when you moved back to England again?
I was 7 years old.
Okay, and then you started to sing in the choir, and
yeah.
Were you surrounded by music in your family back then? Did your parents listen to different kinds of music, or how did you
get
into music?
Yes, my mum was a classical professional musician. She sang with the BBC Singers, actually, for 3 or 4 years. When she left, she went to the Royal Academy of Music in London and had a very sort of career, a great career starting as a classical musician, a singer, as a mezzo-soprano. And she sang with the BBC Singers. And actually, a few years ago, the Soul to Soul did a session at Maida Vale Studios, which is a famous BBC studios in London. And Mum came to see the show, and she said most of the building's exactly the same. You know, it
wow.
all looks exactly the same. So there I was, all these years later. She'd been working there in the 50s.
Wow.
And there I was back in 2000s. You know, in the same spot. So it's a very precious. We had a beautiful picture of me, Jazzy, and my mum.
Wow.
It was lovely. Yeah, it was a very special evening, that one.
So it became a walk on memory lane for your mother.
Definitely, yes, most definitely, yeah.
Baby.
then in your teens, I assume, you went clubbing. And yeah. Especially you went to one club, the Africa Center.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. What attracted you by going there to this place? Was that the hottest one at the moment, or...?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Soul to Soul, before they ever made any music, were a collection of DJs. There was Jazzy B, there was HB, and then Jazzy Q, and Daddy Harvey as well. And the four of them were Soul to Soul. That was before any music they made any music, you know. And so I was going to their club, particularly the one at Africa Center, although they had their own sound system. So Soul to Soul, right at the start, were a sound system. So they had the whole setup. They could go anywhere, set up and play and have a party, you know.
Wow.
And Jazzy still, you know, that Soul to Soul ethic, sorry, that sound system ethic, is absolutely built into the whole thing. You know, it's the thing where you can just set up and instant party, you know. So yeah, the night at the Africa Center was incredible, still by far the best club I've ever been to in my life. And I'm telling you, it wasn't to do with the fantastic light show or sort of the facilities. They were pretty basic facilities, but it was like 400, 500 people crammed into a small room, but a kind of funky room. It had an interesting architecture. It had sort of steel pillars down into the middle of the room, coming with a balcony area. And the atmosphere in there was so intense, man. The tunes were so heavy. And that was at a time, late 80s, where you'd hear rare groove, you'd hear house music, early house music,
right.
You'd hear, you know, that era of hip hop, so Public Enemy, Tribe Called Quest, Spoonie G,
yeah,
you know,
the Godfather,
kind of
Spoonie
tunes.
G, the Godfather.
I'm the Godfather. I'm the Godfather. I'm the Godfather of rap.
Let's get this straight. And you know, there was at least 800 people waiting outside trying to get in every night, every Sunday night.
Wow, I actually went to the UK a couple of times during that period just to buy.
You did?
Yeah, to buy records, and there was a store called Bluebird Records. Do you remember
yeah,
that one?
Yeah, I remember it very well. I went in there plenty of times. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where I bought my 12-inch of Spoonie G, The Godfather.
Oh, that's a classic.
Yeah, very much so, and. I was thinking that the soul-to-soul sound, what we maybe call the soul-to-soul sound on like Back to Life and Keep on Moving, that's actually a rare groove rhythm on that one. Did it came from Dennis Edwards, Don't Look Any Further, or did it come from James Brown or other rare grooves?
Well, it's a kind of a real old mashup of all those things you've mentioned and a few other things, you know. And of course, that don't forget that incredible remix that Cold Cut did of Paid in Full.
Right,
where
yes,
the Dennis
yes,
Edmonds,
absolutely,
Edwards,
yes.
Bassline, you know.
Yes.
And in fact, we have a funny story, me and Lane in the studio. You know, if someone's done a great take with the vocals or playing or something, we don't say that's great or anything. We just say Dennis Edwards, because it's like, don't look any further. You got it. You don't have to do any more. We don't have to look any further.
Right. Because that track was just, it wasn't a... When the track came out, Don't Look Any Further, it became, of course, very popular, but it wasn't a sort of a innovative track at the time.
No,
it was just
not really.
A track like other tracks, but
indeed.
It became...
I think it was the bass line. It's
right.
One of those tunes where the bass line is such a strong melody all in its own right. And if you... you know, Cold Cut definitely sampled it. We when we did Back to Life, we wanted a bass line that had a similar vibe to that, but I played in a whole new bass line, but it definitely had that kind of feel of Don't Look Any Further. And you know, I think with the sampling of it, Cold Cut just, they stripped all the top frequencies out of it and just had that, and it just sounded so fresh and interesting, right. You know, almost reggae-like in a way. You
absolutely
know?
Yes, it was maybe a natural step, especially maybe in the UK. It was natural with reggae, except for jazz funk in the UK. So I talked to Carl McIntosh here a few years ago of Loose Ends, and formerly of Loose Ends, and he wanted to go your way, your direction, with a more street-oriented sound, because they were working with Nick Martinelli with this sophisticated electronic sound, and he wanted to move into your direction, and that was probably one of the reasons they split up, and he went his way. Did you work with Carl as well back then, or did you communicate?
We did. That's a very, very interesting question you asked, because I worked on an album that never saw the light of day, an artist called Fumi. Mm-hmm. And we produced it together. We had a great time. We got on so well, Carl and I. And then, you know, a year or two after that, that's when I left. Left UK for Canada. So we never kind of got to finish anything off, but just recently he came to Canada to Toronto to do a show, and we got back in touch and started doing a little bit of music together. So I think we're definitely going to finish it off, and it'll be very exciting to do something with that. That's something for the future. But Carl's a great friend of mine and a lovely human being, and I think he's a very innovative, very talented man, you know, and so watch this space on that one.
Wow, yes, because his solo works the Loose Ends Experience, I think he called it, that was, and Danny Madden, you know, Facts of Life.
Brilliant stuff, yeah.
That was very much the same kind of groove that you had, and we talked about it, he told me, I think it was a few years ago now, that you had a sort of a communication between Soul to Soul and him.
Very much so, yes, absolutely. Carl, somebody said on an interview recently, you know, there was a sort of a line that goes from all the Brit funk stuff, so High Tension and Beggar and Co, Light of the World, Incognito, you know, through to Carl McIntosh, Loose Ends, and then Soul to Soul, you know, and Junior Giscombe in there too, of course, you know.
But he worked with Jamal Lewis and Montemore and those guys as well.
Well, I worked, I don't know if you're familiar with the work I did with Junior, but that was very much at the start of my career as a producer after Soul to Soul. I did some work on his album, Junior's album. I can't remember what it was called. Step Off, I think it was. But we did two tunes, one of which was Morning Will Come, which is a very loved tune here in the UK. Mm-hmm. People adore that song. And I've got, Junior's a good friend of mine and a wonderful human being. And he wanted to work with me right back then. And I was so thrilled, you know. To me, he was a hero of mine, you know.
SoulInterviews.com,
the home of Soul Interviews.
Morning will come.
Go wrong. Now you're moving in.
she's singing, seems to sing a special song just for you. Morning will come with the rise of the sun, showing you the way I must live. At the dawn of the day, spirits will rise to find a new way. Look around you, see the sadness and the broken promises.
Between Junior Giscombe and Simon Law, entitled Morning Will Follow, from the early 90s. Soul to Soul began as a discussion between some of the most popular DJs on the club African Center. Simon Law explains.
Because my sister and I, Joanna Law, who sings on my album, one song is her song featuring her, and then she joins me on the very final song, which is called Heart of God, and she sings some beautiful kind of ad lib. It's almost Ennio Morricone like song, that one. But she and I, way back there in the 80s, we got signed to Chrysalis Records, but on a tune called City Heat. And the man who signed us there was Peter Robinson, who happens to be the owner of Dome Records, who is the label owner of that's the label where my album is coming out on.
Yes.
And so I have a long relationship with Peter. And so Joe and I made this tune, and we took it round and gave it to DJs in all the clubs. And of course, Jazzy was one of the people I really wanted him to hear it. And he really loved it, and they played it. And for me, it was a thrill to just be in at the Africa Center hearing my tune blasting out the speakers. But then, you know, they'd already made the tune Fair Play, and he asked me to come down to the studio and get involved in what they were doing. And it was a very natural, beautiful sort of process, because we just fitted in so well together. And Nellie Hooper too, back in those days.
Yes.
And Karen. And it was a very sort of, it's a lovely kind of collaborative collective of people, all kind of chipping in with their ideas, and it all seemed to just gel together so fluidly. And it was a really lovely time, amazing time.
Is it correct to say, Simon, that you were the maybe the arranger, and you took care of the melodies and the keyboards?
Yeah, I was more the musician in there, who played, you know. Jazzy was a DJ and a producer, and had such a great vision for the project. Nelly was much more involved in the sort of production and the quality and the sounds and everything, and also drum programming, and kind of just was had a little bit more experience in production than the rest of us at that time. And then, because he'd been with Wild Bunch, and he came from Bristol area, so he'd been involved in making records down there already. Mm. So Nelly's involvement more in the production was key, and then Karen, of course, with the vocal arranging. But I was involved in the sort of more musical end of it all. Yeah.
When you heard, let's say, Back to Life and Keep on Moving for the first time, were you aware of that it was on its way to become a huge hit worldwide?
I wasn't really, no. I mean, I think we all thought that it was going to be do okay, because Soul to Soul already had such a name, and they had a sort of vibe that was beyond music, you know. It was this sort
a brand
of kind of a movement, really, or a sort of way a way of life almost, you know. Jazzy had the shop, he had two shops at one point, one in Camden and one on where was it, somewhere more in central London, on Tottenham Court Road. Yeah. And you know, they were running clubs, they were so all over the place, they were being written about in newspapers and in magazines, and like they were absolutely flavor of the moment, regardless of whether the music was being made, you know. So we knew it was going to do okay. But then when it started to really go crazy in America, that was just, that was beyond any of our dreams, you know.
It must be a strange feeling, maybe, to and suddenly you earned a lot of money as well, and became famous.
Yeah. What was interesting for me is I got a publishing deal, and I felt like I was properly a professional musician, and that was an amazing feeling that I could actually make a living from from music, making music, which is what I love the most, you know. And it was, from that point of view, it was a wonderful wonderful time. I think we all knew that. You know, I think we all knew that it was good, because we cared about it a lot, and we wanted it to make it good. We also wanted it to not sound like anything else. We weren't trying to fit into any template that was out there, or any kind of sort of style. We were actually really making the style, setting the trend ourselves, and we knew that. And we wanted to do that, and we felt confident about that. And so for it to actually be a commercial success as well was really lovely, you know. It was amazing.
Oh,
reggae with hip hop, rare grooves, and also soul music with strong melodies and beautiful arrangements, and I think those contrasts makes it what it was.
Yeah. Well, I think you're very right to point those things out, man. I think even back then, you could, with technology the way it was, you could make a record that sounded good. It did all the right things. But, you know, it might not be such a great song, not really saying anything. It might not have such great melodies. It might not have, you know, anything particularly special about it. It would still be okay, but it's like, those are the things. Melody is absolutely key. In fact, there's a beautiful quote by Quincy Jones himself, where he said, "Melody is the voice of God."
Wow.
You know, and the melodies are key. And I don't know if you noticed, but on my album, I dedicate it to four people. I dedicate it to my mum and dad, who obviously taught me so much in my life and given me so much. And then another person was Ross Anderson, who is my first musical partner, and he died sadly last year. And then the fourth person is Maurice White of Earth, Wind & Fire, who I was extremely fortunate, blessed to go and work with in 91. And after the success of Soul to Soul, of Back to Life, really, and Keep on Moving, which he personally loved, and sort of tracked me down to ask me to go over there and work with him.
Wow.
And he was my absolute hero and mentor, you know. He still is to this day. He always talked about melody all the time. Everything he did, that, you know, even the drum patterns had melodies, you know, the bass lines, everything. If you go back and really listen hard to Earth, Wind & Fire's music, it's full of the most amazing melodies, you know, and the harmony that supports it. You can, if you've got a strong melody, you can get crazy with the harmony underneath it, you know. And the rhythms can be so complex. That's what's the extraordinary thing with Earth, Wind & Fire. They brought such complexity into music, and yet they had massive pop hits, you know. And that's why I think the music lasts so long, those reasons.
And I don't think we should forget, Simon, the songwriting, because you have co-written those songs as well.
I would totally agree with you, man. The songwriting is actually, when I mention all those things I've said to you, that they are the nuts and bolts of the song, you know, and those are so key. And without those, you don't have a very good song, or a song that won't last, or a song that won't connect to people, you know.
Because the message is they became club hits, but the messages in the songs are rather deep and uplifting at the same time. So it's a serious kind of message in those songs, but it worked well on the dance floors as well.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing. You know, music is such an amazingly powerful force, transformative force, and it's almost magical, really, you know, when you think about it. It's how it can transform your mood, how it can lift your spirits, how it can transport you away on the dance floor. You can absolutely lose all your cares, and life can suddenly feel good, you know, and you get renewed strength. If you combine I think that's one of the reasons I love soul music so much. I mean, and particularly the music of the 70s with Marvin and Curtis, Gil Scott-Heron. These people had very serious things to sing about.
Absolutely.
But their music was so infectious, and you could dance your ass off to it as well, you know.
Yes.
So what better two things to combine, you know?
And the success with Soul to Soul, like you said, it gave you a possibility to work with Maurice White, but you also worked on J.T. Taylor's second solo album, his best one, according to me, Feel the Need.
Yeah.
You produced a couple of tracks, the first songs on the album, which were brilliant. It was a sort of a Soul to Soul kind of groove on those songs.
Well, I think that was totally...
A wish, maybe, from the label as well.
Yeah, they certainly wanted that, but I also kind of wanted to stretch out into my own, you know. This was sort of post Back to Life, and I Jazzy and took a band to the States and did a big tour, and I was invited to be part of that, but I wanted to concentrate on my own productions and stretch out into my own areas. I wasn't leaving the band, I just wanted to do that, and had been doing that before I met him. So JT and Shante and Gajuna Giskam, those are people who gave me this wonderful opportunity to sort of produce things in my own right, and I loved it. And you know, yes, you'll hear Soul to Soul echoes in there, but I also think it sort of goes into other areas that perhaps wouldn't make a Soul to Soul record, but that's me, you know, and working, of course, with the artist as well, you know.
Baby,
oh,
great example on the diversity of Simon Law, which gave ex-Kool & the Gang vocalist JT Taylor a big push forward in his career with the Long Hot Summer Night and Feel the Need, which we just played. You also fought and struggled maybe a bit against New Jack Swing back then.
But I love the way you put that.
Yeah, but you kept it away from you, Simon.
I did. I tell you what, somebody reminded me of a tune. I did a remix of Paid in Full. No, not Paid in Full. Don't Sweat the Technique by Eric B. and Rakim.
Mm-hmm.
Who were real heroes of mine. Their album Paid in Full,
absolutely,
I think, was a real a bit of a watermark, you know, change in hip hop. It really kind of ushered in a new sound, something that we just loved that album. Everyone here that I was going clubbing with and stuff, we just adored it, you know. Thought it was such a deep record, and we listened to it a lot, Jazzy and I and Nelly, you know, for ideas. And that remix that I did of Don't Sweat the Technique, which was sort of mid 90s, early 90s, that has a bit of, I got to tell you, that has a bit of Jack Swing in it, man. A bit of a nod in that direction.
I guess you were sweating while recording that one.
I wasn't sweating the technique, though.
No. We have to look to the sky, of course, Simon. Your new... Is it your first solo album? Is it... Can I say
my
that?
My first solo album, yeah, absolutely.
I interviewed Tito Jackson here. He did his first solo album after four decades in the industry, but it's rather unusual. How come this came out
now,
at this point?
Yes, it's a good question, and the reason is I felt very content and happy being a producer and working with other people. I love the collaboration that you do in music is absolutely key to me, and I love it. You know, I love working with other people. I'm not a solo artist. I'm not a singer-songwriter who sits down with my piano and just writes on my own. You know, everything on the album, bar two tunes, are all in collaboration with different artists, and writing the songs with them too. And particularly Lane Gray, who is my main songwriting partner. And so I felt really content with that situation, and I was getting into other things. I do quite a lot of work in Canada with folks with dementia, so music and how music can help people with dementia, and we're involved in some research there about that as well at the moment.
Wow, great.
So, I do other things too, but what I did feel is that I had a collection of songs, tapes, some of them in only cassette form, and of songs which I felt were really strong, and I felt like they needed to see the light of day. These songs need to be heard. And, you know, every musician, songwriter will tell you they've got shelves and shelves of songs that sort of, well, you heard the stories about Prince, right?
He's got
vaults of music unreleased. And I totally believe it. You know, you just make the stuff, and then for one reason or another, it gets put on the shelf. Maybe it's not right for that particular time in music, or you get sidetracked into something else, or something else is a priority, and things get put aside. And I felt like I had this increasing amount of material that was really strong, and really the album is a retrospective of my material, songs at least, not productions, but songs that were written from 25 years ago right up to now. And I really wanted to do something with this, and that's when I approached Peter at Dome Records, and he was really into the idea. I played him some of these things, you know. I think there was the song with Karen, Morning Love. There was Nadine Sutherland's song, which is Love Comes Back to You, which is the oldest song in the collection, and a few others, and he loved it, you know. And so that's when we said, right, okay, let's do this. And it was a lovely process of getting back in touch with artists I worked with many years ago, Maxi and Shantae, and putting this whole thing together. It was a beautiful process.
Morning Love. That's probably my favorite. That's a beautiful one.
Great.
What's your thought about that one?
Well, that one is Karen and I just simply doing our thing, really. There's no big secret there. It's just Karen Wheeler and I have known each other since probably 87. And whenever we get together, I sometimes play with Soul to Soul. I'm not in the permanent touring band, but I get up and play with them sometimes. It's always so great. And we, from time to time, have collaborated over the years, writing stuff. And this was a song that she came to do a show in Toronto just on her own. And we had a couple of days writing. And this was a song that came out of that session. And I loved it. And I just had the melody and the lyric of the chorus. That's all I had. I think I maybe had a bit of an idea about the drum groove, and it just flowed once we sat down together. And I think I just had the piano idea, and I told her that idea, and then she wrote the verse, and we just it just came to be really, really beautifully and quickly, you know. And then we just a matter of recording it between. We recorded some of it in New York, where she lives, and some back in Toronto, and then I finished it off with some other musicians. There's a great guitarist on that track called Adrian Eccleston. It's a great guitarist from Toronto. And actually, interestingly enough, on that tune, the bass is played by Astrid Foster, who's in my band in Toronto, which is called Jen Schaefer and the Shiners. It's actually my partner's band. And I'm the drummer and producer of that band. And she's the bass player. And she played bass on that tune really beautifully. And yeah, there it is. Me on drums as well. I'm a drummer as well, first and foremost. So all the drums you hear on this record is me. You know, people know me as a keyboard player, but first of all, I'm a drummer. So it was nice to get a chance to play a lot of drums on this record too.
You have very much been a person behind the scenes, more in the spotlight. Most people in the world have heard you, but they don't know who you are.
That's a nice way to put it. Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Yeah. Have you felt sometimes that you haven't got the credit you deserve for what you have achieved?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't think so. I think... you know, obviously, always with music, the name of the band or the artist is the absolute focus, and for most people, they just hear the singer, really, and this nice music behind, you know. But I know that amongst all the people who really know about music and really are interested, they absolutely know who I am, you know. And I've actually found that even more so with the release of this record and some of the interviews I've done and some of the feedback that's coming in, which has been overwhelmingly good. I'm thrilled with the feedback so far. It's wonderful, and it's lovely to get that recognition now. But I haven't sought it in the past. I have never felt you know, hard done by or anything, not at all. Hi, this is Simon Law, aka the Funky Ginger of Soul to Soul. You're listening to DJ Soulie on soulinterviews.com.
Yeah. SoulInterviews.com,
the home of Soul Interviews.